Defending Jacob by William Landay. Continued. Disc 4. Chapter 10. Leopards. Jonathan's office was a little warren of cluttered rooms in a century-old Victorian near Harvard Square. The practice was essentially a one-man operation. He did have an associate, a young woman named Ellen Curtis, who was just out of Suffolk Law. But he used her only as a stand-in on days when he could not be in court himself, usually because he was held on trial elsewhere, and to handle basic legal research. It was understood, apparently, that Ellen would move on when she was ready to launch her own practice. For now, she was a vaguely disconcerting presence in the office, a mostly silent, dark-eyed observer of the clients who came and went, the murderers, rapists, thieves, child molesters, tax evaders, and all their cursed families. There was a bit of Northampton about her, a bit of the college kid's orthodox radicalism. I imagined she judged Jacob harshly. The suburban rich kid who pissed away all the advantages he had lucked into, something like that. But her behavior gave nothing away. Ellen treated us with elaborate politeness. She insisted on calling me Mr. Barber and offered to take my coat whenever I showed up, as if any hint of intimacy would undermine her neutral pose. The only other member of Jonathan's team was Mrs. Wirtz, who kept the books, answered the phone, and when she could no longer stand the mess, reluctantly scrubbed the kitchen and bathroom while murmuring murder under her breath. She bore an uncanny resemblance to my mother. The best room in the office was the library. It had a red brick fireplace and bookcases lined with familiar old law books, the honey bindings of the Massachusetts and federal case reports, the army green mass appeals reports, the wine red of the old mass practice series. It was in this warm little den that we gathered just a few hours after Jacob's arraignment in early afternoon to discuss the case. We three barbers sat around an old circular oak table with Jonathan. Ellen was there too, scribbling notes on a yellow legal pad. Jacob wore a burgundy hoodie that had the logo of a clothing company on the chest, a silhouette of a rhino. As the meeting began, he slumped in his chair with the cavernous hood over his head like a druid. I told him, "Jacob, take your hood off. Don't be disrespectful." He slipped it off with a sulky flip and sat there with an absent expression, as if the meeting was a matter for grown-ups that held little interest for him. Lori, in her sexy schoolmarm glasses and a lightweight fleece pullover, looked like a thousand other suburban soccer moms, except for the shock-hammered look in her eyes. She asked for a legal pad of her own and gamely made ready to take notes along with Ellen. Lori seemed determined to keep her head, to think her way out of the maze, to remain clear-headed and industrious even in this surreal dream. She might have had an easier time of it, honestly, if she had not been so engaged. The stupid and belligerent have it easy in these situations. They can simply stop thinking and gird for battle, trust to the experts and to fate, insisting that everything will turn out right in the end.